screams, look at bottom action. Have my radio playing on my rock and roll station. Saw three hot ladies down by the square. I said, jump in, girls, let's go party somewhere.
Crank it on, blow it out, rip it on, let's party now. Crank it on, blow it out, rip it on, let's party now.
What is going on, everybody? My name is Larry Francis, but you know me better on Instagram as A Wrestling Historian. And today on To Be Determined, I have my guest with me, actor and WWE German commentator, Tim Haber. How you doing, sir?
Very good. Thank you very much.
I know you had to jump through some hoops to be here, but I want to thank you for being on my show, and I want to thank the WWE for letting this happen.
Oh, of course. My pleasure.
So for the listeners out there who aren't familiar with you, could you give us an abridged version of your life story?
Sure. I mean, I'm going to say it's probably everybody. I came to New York City when I was 17 to pursue acting. Went to acting school, you know, did the whole classical theater. I have a Shakespeare background. Did a lot of immersive theater in New York, stuff like Sleep No More. I'm currently in a show called Drunk Shakespeare, which I believe this is how we connected, this is how you met me. And then about two and a half years ago, for some reason, my agent said, do you want to audition for WWE? I was a huge fucking fan, so am I allowed to swear on this?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Like, I'll do that. Okay, good.
We're not PG here.
Oh, perfect. And obviously, I was like, oh, it's going to be a fun story if I just go out to Stamford. I can tell my friends, you know, I auditioned for WWE. They turned me down. Hilarious, right? Turns out they wanted to see me again for a callback. Came back, did it again, and then by the third time they said, would you like a job? And I was shocked. Still am. Still really can't believe that I have this job. And yeah, that's like the quick rundown of it.
A couple of years ago, the wife and I went to New York for the first time, and we went to go see Drunk Shakespeare. She heard things about the show, and it was on our things to do list. I can't remember if it was Macbeth or Hamlet, but
it's always Macbeth.
Okay. So we saw the show, and during your performance as Macbeth, you did the John Cena "You Can't See Me" gesture. And I turned to my wife. I said, "Oh my God, he's a wrestling fan because nobody else does that." And I wanted to speak with you after it was over, but you went to the back, and I said to myself, okay, I'll just catch him later.
Being a real diva. Yeah.
Because I knew you were the German commentator for the WWE pay-per-views, and I'm like, oh my God, that's the same guy. What are the chances that this guy that we saw at a stage play in New York City would be part of the foreign language team for the World Wrestling Entertainment?
It's insane. I mean, like, I've had it before, like, maybe once or twice, because, like you said, it's such a weird thing that the German announcer for WWE would be doing some raunchy off-Broadway play in New York City. So, like, sometimes I'll get people who are not quite sure, and then they slowly, like, could you possibly be the guy? And I'm just like, yeah, please don't tell Vince that I do this on the side.
Does the office know?
Yeah, no, they know. I got confirmation from them before. I was like, guys, before you hire me, I do also get drunk for a living and tell awful, awful puns on stage. I hope that's all right. They were very cool about it. I just can't talk about it on the air. I don't think children should be hearing about me taking all those shots on the weekend.
Right, it wouldn't fit the company image.
Yeah, of course. They're very particular with it, and obviously I understand. It's a giant company, and you know, we're marketing a lot to children, so obviously you have to keep it clean.
So another funny thing about all this is my wife, she's a huge fan of Alexander Skarsgård.
Okay.
She watched True Blood, you know, Eric Northman, and she was looking at you like, wow, he really looks like Alexander Skarsgård, so she kind of has a liking to you because of the resemblance.
Hey, you know, I'll take that comparison. It's a lot nicer than what I get from several people on Twitter who are like, he looks like he was made in a lab in Germany, and they sent him over. So I'll take the Skarsgård comparison.
So how did you get involved with Drunk Shakespeare?
it was just an audition unit. I saw it on the Backstage, which is, you know, this like casting website online, and it just said, you know, you get to drink and you get to perform Shakespeare, which are two of my favorite things in life. So I naturally had to do that. It wasn't like some sort of special story where somebody told me that. I just literally saw a casting notice for it, went, and was fortunate enough that I got cast in it.
How long did it take?
The casting process?
Yeah.
That was a quick turnaround. I think I went in there for maybe one audition, and then 2 days later they called me and said, got the job. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't like a whole lot of like nail biting or anything.
So just like that, you're the lead star of Drunk Shakespeare, huh?
I wouldn't call myself a lead star, but...
Well, you play the lead role, I'll put it that way.
The lead role, yeah. I gotta stay humble here.
Yes.
You know, I'm a member of an ensemble.
Yeah, exactly.
But, just like that.
It's great that you're a team player. How long have you been with Drunk Shakespeare now?
I think it's almost... It's been 4 years now. I mean, time really flies. I recently did my 900th show for them, which that was a mess. I mean, if you want to talk about throwing wrestling just ideas out there and, like, you know, talking about wrestling and off-Broadway shows, like that little John Cena hand gesture that I did when you were there, nothing compared to what I did at my 900th. I think I came in to, I used Johnny Gargano's entrance music. Throughout the night, I just always made references to it. Just somebody would tap me in the balls. I'd say it was like a real Nakamura situation. I super kicked everybody. It was weird. I think if you were not a wrestling fan, you were not a big fan of that show.
Was that the same show where you got chest chopped?
Oh, yes. And by a person who is not a professional, so that one really hurt. And those marks, they stayed on my body for, I think, about a good week. I did take a good chop at Money in the Bank by Ray Rougeau and by Funaki, actually. Both of them were terrible, and I wouldn't recommend anybody asking Ray Rougeau to chop you.
How'd that come about?
Oh, it's because, like, Calvin, my other German co-commentator, the small one, not Carson, the older guy who's with us all the time. We're pretty good friends with Ray, actually, backstage, especially like, just with the French announce team. And Ray is still, he's a very young, jovial guy, real nice. You know, I sit there with them every big event and just ask them questions. You know, like, what was it like wrestling with this guy? What was it like? So back in the day, how would you go about with this? And every single event, I would just always say, like, one day I'll take a chop from you. And we just kept on making this joke. And I think we just had a lot of downtime this Sunday at Money in the Bank. And we're just like, you wanna chop us? Wanna shoot that? And then Calvin, this is the worst part about this. I take that chop like a champ, right? So I put my chest out, I present it, you know, use the area, he chops me, it hurts like hell. Calvin sees me getting chopped by him, and he then pulls away, so it looked terrible on camera, and it didn't make a sound, so we had to do it again. And then Calvin does the same thing, so I get chopped properly 3 times. I'm not kidding, my chest looked close to that of Daniel Bryan after the Greatest Royal Rumble. It was not okay.
Oh, wow.
And then I had to get one from Funaki, too, who loves to talk about how he learned from Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, of how to do a chop, so he got me with a good one as well. A lot of fun times before big events. I will, after seeing that men's ladder match, though, you know, I can't really complain after seeing what Finn Balor took him, so... You know, I'll take those huge chops rather than taking those ladder bumps that Finn Balor had to take.
Is Funaki still WWE's number one announcer?
Of course he is. How dare you even question that, sir?
Oh, I just had to make sure because, you know, Michael Cole probably say something about it.
I think doesn't Michael Cole say the number one announcer when they do that at International Road? I think Tom Phillips says. He still gets the respect that he deserves.
So what'd you think of Money in the Bank?
I loved it. I thought it was a great pay-per-view, I think. The speed of it, just the timing of it, the pacing of the matches, I thought was wonderful. I'm glad, you know, they gave Bayley that big push, which I think a lot of people in the universe have been looking forward to. I thought AJ versus Seth was just as good as we all were hoping for. I will say I was hoping for maybe even a little bit more time, just for them to maybe another 10 minutes just to like really put on the classic. But now that AJ Seth, and then obviously the Money in the Bank ladder match with the men was, I mean, that was just a spot fest. That was, my God, some of those bumps those guys took. Also, I just loved the way they treated Orton in that match, or the way Orton just like handled that entire match, just like waiting on the outskirts, just being, going back to like the real Viper that he is, just pulling out the younger guys, slamming them on the tables. Overall, yeah, no, I had a great time at that pay-per-view, man. That was a fun one. What did you think about it?
I enjoyed everything about the women. Like you said, Bayley finally getting her moment, Becky Lynch having to defend her titles back-to-back, and then Bayley coming out to make the save.
Lacey Evans is looking great. I'm really excited to see what they do with her in the future.
I liked her entrance. It reminded me a lot of the Three Amigos.
Yeah. Yeah. They got something there. It's exciting. And obviously, a lot of people were bummed about the ending with Brock coming in and cashing in. But, oh no, I love Brock. That man he exudes an energy that very few people have. Like, when we sit ringside, he actually terrifies us. Like, I'm not kidding. This man, I try to avoid eye contact because we've had two situations now at both Manias where I'm pretty sure just because I made eye contact with him, or like one of us at the announce table made eye contact with him, he came over and went in New Orleans. He threw a portable table at us, and then he threw Seth at us this year. So I'm just trying to stay out of Brock's way. That guy is terrifying.
That's probably because he found out you're a fan of the New England Patriots.
Oh yeah, probably. Which, you know, come on, dude. Like, why do you have to judge me for liking greatness so much?
Well, that was one of my favorite things you did at Drunk Shakespeare, was coming out to the Tom Brady jersey. That was probably the best way to get heat from the crowd.
Oh God, yes. There's nothing better. Ooh, I love getting heat at Drunk Shakespeare so much, especially in New York. It's so easy, man. You just throw in some sort of Brady reference for something about Boston sports, and they go crazy.
So you said you moved to New York, right?
Yeah.
How'd you become a fan of the Patriots?
I'm going to preface this by saying I know I took the easy way out by choosing Boston sports teams in America to root for. My best friend at acting school was from Boston, and growing up in Germany, I loved American sports. Like, would stay up late and I watched basketball, hockey, American football, obviously. And I would come over to his place all the time just to watch sports. I was like, I got no team to root for. Like, I got no horse in the race. You seem to go pretty crazy for the Celtics and for the Patriots whenever I come over to watch. So I might as well just, you know, we might as well have like a good time with it. So I'm going to start following your teams. And then I just fell into it, you know. And I will say I'm very lucky that I get to support teams that constantly win. But I will also say that I have my heart in team with my German hometown soccer team, the HSV, which HSV. We are terrible, so I get to have like my heart crushed every game day there.
But that's the thing about Germany, you know, there's some great talent that came from there. You got Alex Wright, you got Jazzy Gabbert.
Yep. And it's more and more. I mean, like the WXW, they got a lot of great talent. And I think also now with NXT, going over to NXT UK, we're just seeing all this great European talent, which I'm very excited for. And obviously, you can see, we already see like what they can do in the ring, especially. I mean, if we look back at the TakeOver match with Walter and Pete Dunne, I mean, I love that match. I really enjoy the way Europeans structure wrestling matches, where it's like a slow build, and then all of a sudden it's just big move after big move after big move. And, you know, I think that was probably one of my highlights for that TakeOver, was that Walter Pete Dunne match. So I'm very excited to see what else we're going to get out of Europe pretty soon. And you also Fabian Aichner, who's been fantastic. Just a lot of great talent coming over from Europe at the moment.
A lot of fans were upset about the ending of Money in the Bank, but I still thought it was a better ending than Game of Thrones.
I think most of us thought that. But, like, I'm very happy Game of Thrones in those first four seasons. I loved all of it. And I'm not going to say later seasons are an idiot or anything. I just thought they really tried to speed up the ending. I don't know. That ending, I will say, really did annoy me. That it seemed like a sitcom towards the end with Tyrion. Braun becomes Master of Coin. It really did feel like fan fiction. I did not care for it. So yeah, I will say I'd rather than that last episode of Game of Thrones. Plus, I will also say this: Brock Lesnar, did you see how happy he looked and how happy he was on Monday Night Raw? Is there anything better than a happy Brock Lesnar?
That's true. I know fans want to hate on him, but as they saw for themselves on Monday night, when he doesn't take himself seriously and loosens up a bit, fans want to like him, and I just wish he would know that.
I think, but isn't it also just that most of the fans actually just really love him as well? It's just that he's not there enough. I think that's the main issue. Because, I mean, the guy is great in the ring. He's fantastic.
Exactly. No, I think it just really annoys me. Like, I'll be on social media and I'll hear always the same complaints, like, he doesn't want to work this house show in Tennessee. And I'm just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But, like, people, I think, also sometimes forget just also, like, how taxing this is on the superstars. What these guys put in, it's just absolutely amazing. And they do that year round. There's no off season for these guys. So they have to battle through injuries. It's a rigorous schedule for them. And I think Brock Lesnar's in a situation now that a lot of these guys wish that they were in. And I really can't begrudge him for saying, no, I'd rather do something else. And, you know, if somebody offered you the title and then said, yeah, and you can choose your own schedule, I think almost everybody would jump onto that. So, like, I get Brock. I enjoy seeing him, and it's, if you haven't seen Brock Lesnar live at an event, you can't really understand what that guy brings to an event, because, like I said, he's terrifying. The energy actually, it really does change in the arena when he enters.
Fans need to understand that whoever their current favorite is, there's going to get to that point where they won't be able to do this all the time, be there all the time. They're going to get to that point where, after paying their dues over the years, they're going to get to that point where they're going to become a part-timer. So are they going to make those same complaints about their guy?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Plus, I mean, you know, at this point, and it's good heat. You know, he's getting heat, which is great.
Don't work yourself into a shoot, right?
That's right. Oh, you know it, brother.
You said you were a WWE fan growing up. Do you remember the first match that got you into it?
The way I got into it, so the very first match I watched, I remember it was on a VHS, a German VHS cassette, and it was Yokozuna versus The Undertaker. And what is funny about that is Karsten Schaefer, the guy who I call it with, the older gentleman who sits with us, our lead guy, he actually called that match. I mean, he's been with the company for, I think, 29 years now or something. And I now get to work with this guy, and he was the first voice that I heard while watching wrestling. But yeah, growing up, I was fascinated with it as a kid. I absolutely loved it. My parents didn't really want me to watch it, so I was like in and out. It was difficult finding like the times to watch it regularly on German TV at the time, so I missed out. I'm also the Attitude Era and stuff. I would pop in, I'd see wrestling, I'd love it, but then, you know, I'd go months without being able to see it. Grew up, got a little bit older, and then they started playing it on this one channel right after school on Tuesdays, I think. I believe it was Tuesdays. They started playing it right after school. So I started watching it, and this was the Ruthless Aggression era, sort of. It was like I started watching it around the time of like Evolution. Orton was still a heel, and I would, you know, I'd come home from school, I got nothing to do, I'm a little bored, I'll put on wrestling. I don't take it seriously at that point. I'm old enough, I'm like, you know, it's fake, but it's silly, this is fun, something fun to do, I'll just watch it, I don't care. But I would still tune in every week, and I'm sort of starting to see, oh, there are storylines here. Oh, wait a minute, this guy attacked that guy yesterday, oh, of course he's going to go after him. And it's still silly, I'm not watching the big events or anything, I'm just tuning into the weekly shows. And then I remember the exact moment. It was the Raw after SummerSlam, where Orton had won the World Heavyweight Champion and has become like the youngest World Heavyweight Champion ever. And they do the Evolution celebration, and I'm watching. It's like, oh, this is fun, hilarious. And then Triple H does the thumbs down. Batista, Ric Flair, and Triple H just like beat the shit out of Orton. He's bloodied up in the ring, and I'm just sitting at home in shock. I'm like, wait a minute, is this fake or is this real? This is amazing. And from that moment on, I was hooked, and I would, you know, force my mother to call, like, by the events. I'd stay up on a Sunday night with the time difference in Germany being so late. I would, like, order the events, get up at 2 a.m., watch the events till 6 in the morning, then go to school, just totally tired. None of my friends really cared, so I was like the lone wolf with being a wrestling fan. But yeah, it was the Legend Killer Orton, pretty much, that got me into wrestling. So yeah, ever since then, I was into it.
And now you're calling his matches. Isn't that crazy?
It's absolutely insane. I remember, like, back in the day, I would tell people, like, I want to work for the company maybe one day, and to actually now be working for the company and walking, like, in the halls before the big events, it's crazy. But also our first event, actually, which was Elimination Chamber, where Bray Wyatt won, and Orton had that match with Luke Harper, and Orton he saw that there were new people sitting at the German announce table, so we got a little hazing from Orton, where he just took Luke Harper and just threw him into our table against us. And afterwards, we were all told, like, yeah, that was Orton hazing you guys. I got so excited. I was like, oh my God, Randy Orton, the guy that got me into wrestling, was hazing me.
So the first pay-per-view that you worked on was when Bray Wyatt became the WWE champion, huh?
Yes, that was the one. What we're seeing now, this new Bray Wyatt that they have, like the Mr. Rogers, Tim and Eric, I'm really excited to see what's going to happen with Bray Wyatt in the future.
I'll be honest with you, at first I wasn't feeling it. I was just like, kind of just eye-rolling the whole segments, but then the last one they did when they had him put on the mask, I'm like, okay, now I'm sold.
Yeah. That was that mask. Ooh, it looks crazy. And then the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star remix, whoever put that together, I mean, hats off to them, because I really enjoyed that. And I think a lot of the fans as well, I mean, like what I've been seeing online, a lot of them were like really excited for those small segments.
Well, I just told you, I think that pretty much reflects a lot of people on social media that had a similar reaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is lame, and then it's like, oh, like...
Wait a minute.
I love when they swerve me like that, you know?
Oh, of course. There's nothing better than being swerved by the WWE. Like a nice surprise or something. Ah, Vince White is the greatest. It's the greatest product out there. It's so much fun.
So what goes behind being a WWE commentator?
It's watching a lot of wrestling. It's reading a lot. I'd say, actually, like, I've been trying to just expand my vocabulary, because you can't just keep on saying the same, like, the same words over and over again for a move or describing something. You know, just, like, you got to use different adjectives. You got to be in there. And, like, I try to bring in, you know, it's like, stuff from the history, like, you know, taking it back to, like, oh, remember, this reminds me of this and this match, and, like, I want to be the encyclopedia of the whole thing. So, yeah, honestly, it's a lot of watching of wrestling, a lot of reading, and that's pretty much it. And, you know, obviously train your voice a little so you don't sound terrible on the microphone. That's pretty much it. And then obviously the preparation of watching the shows leading up, you know, you can't go into a big event without having seen Raw or SmackDown or 205 Live. You gotta be on top of everything. We're actually, the German announced team is actually quite fortunate in that we don't have to do the voiceovers for the promos and stuff, so we have a little bit more downtime pre-show, whereas the other international announcers, everything you see on the screen has to be translated for their respective countries. And that's pretty much it.
Do you translate other programming, or is it just the pay-per-views?
We have German announcers back in Germany. We got Sebastian Huckel over there. We got Manu Thiele, guys that used to call pay-per-views over here. They're now doing the Raw and SmackDown shows back in Germany in a German studio. Yeah, so we're Calvin and myself and Carson. We're not doing the weekly shows. We just do the large events, and then we got those guys back in Germany.
It's got to be pretty surreal still for you, just having the dream job that you get to have a front row seat while you're being watched by millions of wrestling fans around the world.
Oh, it's amazing. I almost cried the first WrestleMania that we got to call, the one in New Orleans. It was so surreal to me. And then also just walking around backstage and all of the legends are there. Everybody is there. It was just crazy. And now, especially, like, you're walking backstage, like, you know, all these people that I grew up loving are now just walking by and giving me, like, a little, like, handshake, or like, hey, what's up, good to see you, man. Just, like, I can't believe that I just walked past Triple H and he gave me a nod, and, you know, his grub was like, hi, how you doing, gentlemen. It's absolutely surreal.
Who are you close with from the active roster?
We try to give them space. I wouldn't say that we're, like, very close with anybody. If anything, I'd say maybe more the announcers. Like, Calvin and I get along very well with Vic Joseph, Nigel McGuinness. Byron Saxton is just one of the greatest people you'll ever meet. He is the nicest person I know, I think. And then, yeah, Mike Rome, Greg Hamilton, we get along very well with them. Then, you know, he's a German speaker, so he's a good guy, depending on the mood that he's in. You know how he is. He gets a little competitive and stuff. I'd say those are the guys. And then everybody else, you know, there's nobody there. It's not like there are any divas back there or anything. It's everybody. It's a very healthy environment. I think that this new WWE has, you know, you hear all these stories from back in the day. I have seen none of that. You know, obviously, like I said, Brock Lesnar, scary guy. You stay away from him, because I don't need to have my face bashed in. by that monster. You know, Braun Strowman and all these crazy monster types just try to stay out of their way. But overall, yeah, it's a nice environment to be in back there. We try to stay out of the way of the superstars. It's more the other announcers that we're close with.
It's funny you mentioned Braun Strowman. It was almost 1 year ago I went to Money in the Bank, and after the pay-per-view was over with, I was going to try and introduce myself and finally meet you and take a picture, but then that's when Braun Strowman came over and you guys took off.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I thought that was pretty funny. I'm like, man...
Braun Strowman ruining it for you. I'm stumbling over that word. Ruining. There we go. That was the one where Kevin Owens had to... That poor man just chokeslammed off of that ladder.
I saw that, and... I don't know. Just some of the things these guys do or agree to, I'm just like, you guys are out of your mind.
And they do it for you. They do it for the fans. This is what they give you.
When you see Kevin Owens take a fall like that, it's just really scary. I'm like, man, what if he missed that table?
Oh, God, I know. Every single time. It was... I mean, also, to bring it back to Money in the Bank, that ladder spot with Andrade and Finn Balor, and the entire match, I'm just seeing that ladder just, like, slip out because it was at a weird angle, so I'm just looking at that ladder. I'm just like, oh, I really wish maybe they'd fix it a little because it's looking very loose. And then that double bounce that Balor took after that sunset flip powerbomb. Oh, good lord. And for some, he walked away from it. I mean, it's amazing the amount of punishment that these people like do to their bodies, and yet apparently it's not that bad because they can still compete the next day.
How long did it take from when you got hired to when you got to start at Elimination Chamber?
I think we didn't even have that much time. We had, I think, about maybe 2 months of preparation where we would just do, we'd call the weekly Raw shows in studio just for practice. And then we were pretty much just like thrown into the deep end and be like, all right, now go call this big event. And back then, we didn't even have the luxury of having Carson with us. You know, the experienced guy to sort of show us the ropes and lead us a little. It was just Calvin and myself doing that first pay-per-view together. And that was a rough one because nobody wants to end up on Botchamania. Nobody wants to end up on Botchamania on their very first show. And we managed to do that because I don't know if you remember this. You know how we always do like the, we cut to and like Tom Phillips or Michael Cole, whoever is the lead guy at that moment, will, introduce the Spanish announced team and then us, the Germans, and he does the Spanish, and normally in our headsets we'll hear him throw to us so we know to look at the camera, we know when we're on. For some reason, something happened with our headset, so we didn't hear Michael Cole throw to us, or Tom Phillips, excuse me. We didn't hear him throw to us, and so all of a sudden, we just hear a voice in our headset being like, Germany, go! Germany, go! We panic. We're like, oh, good. We do our little on-cam stuff, and I look back at it when I got home. And my God, it was just excruciating to watch. It's like, and the German announce team, like Tim Haber and Calvin Keane, and we're just smiling into the camera for a good 4 or 5 seconds, which on camera, that is a lot, and it just seems like it goes on forever. And then suddenly, we go into it. So yeah, we ended up on Botchamania, our very first event. And that was, Twitter was not kind to us.
What's been your favorite match to call so far?
Ooh. Oh, that's a difficult one. I think, the talent at the moment and the the superstars we have, it's just so incredible. I think we've been very blessed in wrestling, I think, these last couple of years, of how good everybody is.
I mean, there have just been so many good matches ever since I started at the company. I think the personal highlight was to be there for Kofi winning his title and getting to call that match. So with your entire body. And then also, also Finn Balor versus AJ Styles from TLC 2017. And, you know, Bray Wyatt had to miss out because he was sick. And then get the two sweet at the end. I mean, what a fucking moment.
One of the biggest challenges for you is how long these pay-per-views are. How do you keep going?
It can get difficult at times. I think one of the main issues that we have is just toilet breaks. I'm not going to lie to you, especially during like a WrestleMania where you're sitting there for 8 hours and you've been drinking water to, you know, stay hydrated and also so your voice doesn't just give out. So I'll tell them to myself, well, oftentimes, just like after the kickoff show or during longer promos, just quickly sprint to the nearest bathroom. Apart from that, you have to power through it. You have to focus on these matches and just try to like find the excitement for myself again, just to keep the energy up. Where it's like, I gotta remind myself, it's like, this is a big event. It's WWE. I can't believe I'm still doing this job. This is fucking great. Look at all these superstars, and then you take it from there. You gotta do mental gymnastics, you know what I mean? Like, you just gotta stay with it, because you can't be there arrive at the main events after a 5-hour show and have absolutely no energy in your voice. It can be taxing. Calvin, I know, likes to drink a lot of Red Bull. I try to stay away from that stuff. I just stay hydrated, drink water, and, you know, just make it work. Make it happen. These guys are putting their bodies on the line. The least I can do is make my voice match their intensity.
When you first started with the company in your position, did anybody take you under their wing?
I mean, Carson did. It's Carson, the guy who's been sitting with us. He wasn't there with us for the first couple of pay-per-views, and then they brought him. He's now coming over for all the events with us. He has just been such a huge help. I mean, he literally would, even when he wasn't there when we first started out, he'd say, "Hey guys, watched the show last night, here are my notes, this is what I think, keep on working." Like, he was always very positive. He was always saying, "You're on the right track, you know, maybe do this, maybe you should work on this." So Carson has been the guy that's really, really helped us, and I can't be any more thankful than I am to this man, because he's really done a lot for us.
Well, your boss, Vince McMahon, used to be the lead commentator. Did you get any tips from him?
Oh, no. Vince McMahon, we barely see him. When we do, he comes by, he says hello, and then he goes back into his office. I do try to say what a maneuver from time to time, though, just as my respect for him.
So what do you do when you're not calling matches?
I watch a lot of wrestling. I'll just rewatch Johnny Gargano winning the title over Adam Cole and celebrate. But apart from that, I'm still acting. I do a lot of acting work outside. I'll, you know, drum Shakespeare, keep on auditioning for other stuff. Play a lot of basketball when I can. Go to the gym. Because, you know, if you're around all these jack dudes for these events, how can you not be like, you know what, I should probably work out a little more. That's pretty much it. I'm just living life in New York City.
What's your favorite thing to do in New York?
Honestly, there's nothing better, I think, especially now that the weather's getting good, just grabbing an iced coffee, just walking around Brooklyn, maybe even like going to the High Line in Manhattan, and then as well, come on, day drinking, watching basketball and day drinking.
Must be pretty cool whenever they do Raw and SmackDown in your backyard.
Oh, it's the best. Whatever live event I can go to, I'll go to. If it's whenever they do a show in New York, even if it's a house show, I'll be there. I just love the atmosphere. I just, I, I try to get all of my friends into wrestling. So whenever something's happening, they're like, hey, you, have you ever been to a wrestling show? No. All right. Do you want to go? And then at first they'll begrudgingly come along, but towards the end, they are like, oh my God, this is actually the best. I love it. I think the best way to get a non-wrestling fan into wrestling, or at least make them understand why it's great, is take them to a live show. Because live shows, it's indescribable how much fun they are.
What do you think of Rob Gronkowski wanting to become a WWE superstar?
I love it, and I hope it happens. I mean, I'm still thinking that he's probably going to play a couple of games this season, or then in January 2020 when the Pats need him. I don't think he's really done with football, but I think he would be great. I mean, he's a great fit for the WWE. This is exactly what they want. This is like, you know, he's jovial, he's fun. You know that he has, like, charisma and charm, and the fans will get behind him. He's obviously a physical specimen. I think he could be a real fun superstar for the WWE.
It'd be funny if he joined the company and they changed his name.
What would they change it to, though?
Probably Barry Berenstein or something like that.
I hope so. Or, hey, you know, make him a member of the New Day.
Yeah, there you go. You fit right in.
Yeah, exactly. And Kofi will be happy.
Eat some pancakes and...
Giant Pats fan. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He is a Pats fan. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
So you and Kofi got the bond already?
Exactly. That's the one thing. That's what keeps us together.
What advice would you have for people wanting to get into acting?
I'd say don't do it at first. And if they still have to do it, then I think they're on the right track. It's a real difficult job to have. I mean, you're just faced with so much. You're just constantly shut down. You know, people are telling you no all the time, and you just have to get over that. It's a lot of hustling, a lot of... I mean, when I first started out, I was doing very little acting and a whole lot of catering. I would say if they actually do want to get into acting, I'd say go to a school first. Just think that you can just go out and somebody will immediately hire you, like winning the lottery. So I'd say get yourself some actual proper training, and then it's just all about, you know, your own stuff. You see all these, you got YouTube now, you got Instagram, you got so many platforms where you can just create your own content, your own material, without having to rely on anybody else. And, you know, don't expect to make any money off of acting in the first couple of jobs that I got into early, but I remember I did a Shakespeare show in the summer in, like, in the middle of Times Square in some small rented studio space. And we did it one night. I think we had five people in the audience. Three of them were my friends. So, yeah, you got to put up with a lot of shit. You know, it's not all glitz and glamour. So yeah, that's what I'd say. I'd say just put in the work, and if you can avoid it, don't go into acting. If you can't, just you gotta hustle.
Do you recall your first acting gig?
Yeah, my first acting gig was the show called Sleep No More, which was this old theater, I mean, this old hotel in the West Village, or rather Chelsea in New York, and it's five, I think maybe even six stories now, and they also do Macbeth, but told through dance, and it's basically this interactive experience. You put on a mask as the audience, and you walk through this old-timey hotel, and it's very surreal. It's, a lot of people find it spooky or scary. It reminds me a lot of, like, Eyes Wide Shut, that Stanley Kubrick film, mixed with, Shakespeare and Alfred Hitchcock. It's absolutely amazing. And the next time you're in New York, I think you and the wife should definitely check it out.
What's it called?
Sleep No More.
Sleep No More?
Yeah.
Interesting. I'll have to Google that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely check it out. Yeah, I was lucky enough that at my last day of acting school, that's the first job I got. But then afterwards, I had to quickly realize that it's not always going to be that easy, that people are going to give you jobs right out of acting school, and I had to hustle.
Are you still auditioning for other acting roles?
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm always auditioning. So, and I love acting. It's fun. My job. So yeah, I haven't gotten one yet, really. I've done like a few stuff, maybe like Hulu, like that Deadbeat show. I don't know if you remember that. I had a small appearance on that. But mainly I'm more theater focused at the moment. I think that's also just like what I've trained for most of my life. I do actually enjoy doing Shakespeare the most. It's where I get the most joy out of.
How do you remember all those lines?
Oh, it's just repetition. That's the part that I hate the most about acting, is learning the lines. With George Shakespeare, obviously, it's easy just because I've done so many shows at this point. I can do that play in my sleep. But, yeah, it's just write down your lines and then just run them like crazy. And it's just, you just go over and over. I learned this weird way of learning lines at acting school, where you take all of your lines, you just write them out without any punctuation on a piece of paper, so it's pages of just words in a row, and you learn them by heart, so that no punctuation, no emphasis on any of the words, you just have to be able to like rattle off all of those lines with, you know, without taking a break or thinking about it or anything. Just that it's so ingrained in your body and in your mind. And yeah, those are the days where I feel like I'm going crazy. Just repeating sentences over and over and over again.
Another thing that impressed me about you doing the Drunk Shakespeare is being able to say those same lines in German.
I will let you know a little secret. Those were not the lines that I should be saying. Pretty much, those are the nights where I just go off on time. Like when I have to do stuff in German on stage at Drunk Shakespeare, I'll usually just talk about my hometown soccer team or whatever's going on in the NBA or in the NFL at the moment.
Oh, that's funny. I had no idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. That's the best part. The audience. Most of them don't speak German, so they're like, oh, those were probably the lines. And not Tim being annoyed about whatever cornerback was drafted or traded away.
So what kind of alcoholic beverages do you consume during the show?
I've switched over to tequila now. I feel like that energizes me more. I used to be an absolute lunatic with it and do a speed rack where it was one shot of tequila, one shot of vodka, one shot of gin, one shot of rum, and then I forget what the other one was. And those were some rough nights. So I decided to, keep it a little professional and just drink one alcohol.
What's the most drunk you got?
Oh, there have been, when I first started and I thought I could handle it and, you know, thought I knew everything of how the show works, there have been like two or three shows that apparently happened, but I don't remember them happening. And then, like, I got back to work the next day, and they're like, yeah, what the dude? That can't happen again. You literally just walked out of the scene without saying something. And, yeah, it was rough. Those are the nights you should try to avoid. I'm getting older now. I mean, I can't drink like I used to. You know, the hangovers last for, like, 2-3 days now.
It's amazing your liver's been able to hold up.
Oh, I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. It's like Terry Funk. My liver will just always be there.
Oh, man. I think if you and I went to the bar, you know, we could probably have a few rounds.
I mean, we tried to connect that Mania this year. It just didn't work. But yeah, next time you're here, we're gonna go toe-to-toe, shot-for-shot.
It's really amazing to me that you drink all that alcohol and be disciplined enough not to let that consume you in your personal life.
Oh yeah, I do not drink outside of the show really that much. I mean, obvious, and it's like celebration, or you want to do some dates, but I'm not that like, you know, like a glass of whiskey. I stay away from alcohol. Real fun reason to drink it.
What's your favorite movie?
Ooh, I will say Casablanca. I love that.
What really gets me about that movie is the ending when they have to part ways.
Oh my god, yes. Also, just like the writing of it just holds up to this day. Such a well-written script. And yeah, like you said, it just has so many like emotional beats, which are fascinating.
Which actor inspired you to pursue this line of work?
The actor who inspired me. I'm probably going to Stewart. Daniel Day-Lewis is another one. And then Christian Bale. Just, I don't really think there was like one person where I was like, this is the one I'd say, Jimmy Stewart. I love those. I love those old-timey movies. I love the classics.
Have you ever walked out of a movie in the theater?
Yes. The Eddie Murphy movie. What was it? The Haunted Mansion movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I remember I saw it with my friends, like the three of us. We went in there. The film started, I think, 20 minutes. We were like, yeah, should we go? And yeah, that was the only movie I ever walked out of.
I'm surprised by that choice. That wouldn't be my first pick, but you know, you actually saw that one in the theater, so I was like, wow, there's a throwback.
Yeah, I know. That we already went there, so big enough. What about you?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. The Winchester.
The Winchester.
My wife, she told me about the actual Winchester. That was this mansion. It was haunted, very dark. Backstory with the homeowner being a paranoid woman, and pretty much her house was like saw in real life. All the rooms were like booby trapped.
Ooh, okay.
The real life story behind it is like, wow, that's really fascinating. So of course they had to make a movie about it, and I'm like, okay, well, we saw the trailer, it looked interesting, so give it a chance. And I watch this movie like I'm trying to have an open mind, but there's a scene in the movie where one of the characters he's like thrown to the side of the room by supernatural force, and I looked at him like, I can't, this is dumb. So we walked out. It was just too much for me, even for Hollywood. You know, it's like, I expect some form of realism.
Sure. It's a very powerful move, I think. You know, getting up in the middle of a movie and just walking out. You feel very powerful.
It's a lot to do because movies aren't cheap these days, so you might as well just take your $20 and set it on fire.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, Jesus, we don't have to get into that of, you know, the economics of film, but good Lord. Spending like $30 on an IMAX ticket now. It's rough.
So you're an actor and a professional wrestling commentator. I mean, sports entertainment commentator. How are you able to balance all that?
I mean, I approach the commentary like I would an acting job. You know, you prepare, and then I just see it more as an improv exercise, or not an exercise, but more as just improv, right? Because you're telling a story. And you're trying to bring over this emotion that's going on in the ring at the moment, and you just got to react. You got to see what the superstars are doing. It's not that much difference because there is like this sort of theatricality to the WWE to the wrestling world. So I just approach it like I would any other acting.
It's amazing that you're able to do all this and not have some sort of schedule conflict.
Oh, yeah. That was, luckily, I mean, WWE, obviously the big events, it's non-negotiable. Like, I tell every other acting job. Like, Trump Shakespeare has been very nice about it, where I just tell them, like, listen, guys, these are the weekend. I can't work. Somebody else has got to cover that shift for me because WWE comes first and foremost. That's my number one job. That's the job that I love, like absolutely love, love, love. And obviously I have a contract with them. I'm signed into this commitment. And fortunately, everybody has been very kind with how to handle this. So So, yeah, no problems at all. Luckily, also, we know in advance when we're going to be there, so I can literally give my dates for the rest of the year to both my manager and to Drunk Shakespeare of when I'll be gone for an event.
How's that part-time schedule for you with the company?
The WWE?
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. I mean, you know, we do the events. We do some in-studio sessions on Friday where we just, you know, record some stuff for the network. It's a very easy schedule. And WWE is extremely wonderful to work with as well. My bosses are the greatest, you know, even for like these Friday schedules, these sessions that we come in for, even if I'm asked to maybe go to an audition that day that my manager just sent me out on, they're always like, oh yeah, fine, we can record that next week, take care of your acting life. I really can't stress enough what a great company WWE has been to work for.
What was it like driving up to Stamford, Connecticut and seeing Titan Towers in front of you?
I mean, we take the train, so we don't really see a whole lot of that. And we're in a smaller studio, so we don't see those giant towers, unfortunately. But it was just, I mean, entering and even at the smaller compound that we work at, it was surreal walking in there, having all like the posters on the wall of all these old pay-per-views that they put on, and yeah, it's just crazy.
I heard if you're an employee of the company, you can request to watch any match at any time.
Oh, I have heard about this. I need to ask my boss about that.
Okay.
But right now, I'm using the network all the time, but I'm sure. I wouldn't be surprised that that exists.
Did you just watch WWF, or did you watch WCW or ECW?
I watched ECW when I got back into wrestling just because I wanted to see, you know, I was like a young rebellious kid. I was like, ooh, I want to see more blood, and I want to see Sabu and RVD throw chairs at one another, or New Jack almost kill somebody. I never really watched WCW. That was unfortunately, like, it was also around the time where I wasn't watching a whole lot of wrestling while all that stuff happened. Like I said, like, I got into it a little bit later on, like, properly. But yeah, I'll go back and I'll watch old matches now. Still not that much WCW, though. I don't know why it's hard for me to get into WCW stuff. Maybe it's just because I'm so loyal to WWE. I was like, oh, it's the Monday Night Wars. I can't watch WCW, even though they won the war.
You said The Undertaker was the guy you watched growing up?
Yeah, as a kid, like, it would be Undertaker, Bret Hart, and then, like, when I caught the snippets of it, like, The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, those were the guys. But to be honest, I don't really remember a whole lot of that. I was still very young. I mean, like, the stuff that I really remember was the Orton stuff, like Legend Killer Orton. The one, like, also, like, speaking of Legend Killer Orton, like, the match that I'll go back to all the time is the Backlash match between him and Cactus Jack or Mick Foley, which I love that match so much. It's a beautiful work of art.
I remember that time WWE officials really wanted to make Orton a top guy, and he was having a hard time connecting with the audience. But I think it was that match where he won everybody's respect because he was crazy enough to land on the thumbtacks without wearing a shirt.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. And then being thrown off the stage and Mick Foley doing the elbow drop on him afterwards. And the barbed wire. It was... that match was... Yeah, that's the one that, like, put Orton on the map for the fans, I think.
What's the end goal for you?
Just, you know, keep on working for the company and then make millions and millions of dollars acting. Right? That's the goal. Just become filthy rich. Cast as Nova.
and the future Marvel movies, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
I could see you playing the role of Richard.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I just need brown hair and a Long Island accent, and I got it.
Hey, you know, Chris Evans retired as Captain America. Maybe he could take his place.
Oh, that's true, but I feel like they're giving it to Falcon now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be the third one, then.
There you go. U.S. agent.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That'll go over well with the fans as well, right? With Sherman playing Captain America.
Was Captain America your favorite growing up?
Yeah, I loved Captain America growing up, Spider-Man, and then later on, Punisher and Wolverine came into the mix as well. I think the only, the comics that I'm, like, reading at the moment are just Wolverine, Punisher, the intergalactic stuff, so, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, Nova, all those guys, and then, yeah, Cap.
If you had a choice, would you rather be on a hit TV show or do a bunch of major motion pictures?
Oh, it depends. I think it really depends on... actually, who am I kidding? I'd probably do the movies. I think the TV show would be nice, but if I got to pick, I'd probably take the giant movies.
Are there any projects you want to promote right now?
At the moment, I'm just going to say, you know, keep on watching the WWE Network. Get excited for Stomping Ground. Get excited for SummerSlam. The Super Showdown. And then, obviously, if you're in New York City, come by to Drunk Shakespeare. Watch me be a menace on stage. And maybe, if you're lucky enough, you can get super kicked by me.
What's your Drunk Shakespeare schedule normally?
I'm usually on for the Friday evening shows, like the 8 and 10 show on a Friday. And they're usually on a Saturday for the 8 and 10 show. And then sometimes during the week, I'll be there on either a Wednesday or a Monday. But yeah, Friday or Saturday is probably when I'm on most.
Before we conclude this interview, I got to put you on the spot.
Sure.
Are you going to Super Showdown?
I'm not. We are not. We will be calling it from Stanford. There will be German commentary for the Super Showdown, but we will not be going to Saudi Arabia.
So we got the long-awaited dream match happening between Bill Goldberg and The Undertaker. Who's your pick?
I was talking about this with Calvin. I really don't know. I'm gonna say Goldberg.
Really?
Yes, I think it's gonna be Goldberg. Now coming in, shaking off that loss against Lesnar at Mania. Yeah, it pains me to say it, but I'm going to say Goldberg. From your response, I assume you're picking Taker.
Well, the only reason why I'm going with Taker is just, you know, I was there in New Orleans when Undertaker came back and he just destroyed John Cena in like 3 minutes. I'm like, alrighty then.
Yeah, true. But hey, you know, Goldberg has been known to destroy people very quickly as well, so...
That is a good point.
It's interesting. I didn't think I would be as excited as I am for this match just to see the outcome. And also, I mean, obviously for the entrances, and I mean, these are two legends of the sport. So, it's. I think you posted it on Instagram where it's like, sure, it's happening like this late in both of these guys' careers, but it's still amazing that we actually get to see the two of them in the ring.
Man, I'm still in disbelief. You know, I've been wanting to see that match for so long, and when they made the announcement, I'm thinking to myself, like, is this for real? Like, am I dreaming? Just came out of the blue.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm very excited. And then also, I mean, Super Showdown, just to promote it a little bit more, Finn Balor versus Andrade, I mean, that should be a barn burner of a match.
Yes, two great athletes going at it for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah, I'm very excited, and it looks like they're gonna be using the Demon for Balor. He's gonna be bringing out the Demon, so that's always very exciting to see.
So, how can fans follow you on social media?
You can find me at Instagram at Heyoh
underscore Haber, H-A-B-E-R, and that's pretty much it. I mean, I don't use Twitter. I think people get to me on Twitter sometimes, and it just it doesn't seem like a nice place. So yeah, Instagram. Go slide into my DMs, y'all.
What's the story behind Heyo?
I just stole that from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh.
Like, all the guys always enter the bar saying, Heyo.
Okay, I was wondering about them. Like, what's Heyo? Like, I didn't get the reference.
Oh, yeah, no, it's Always Sunny. And I've just stolen that reference now. And I just, whenever I enter the room or whenever somebody comes back, I say, Heyo.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this interview with me.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Thank you for having me.
Alrighty then, well, you keep doing your thing, calling all these great matches on WWE TV.
Thank you very much, man.
Alright, we'll talk to you later.
Alright,
bye.
Bye.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? Da ha, you never thought that hip hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the world's trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Peace to Raw G, Brucey B, Kid Capri, Funk Master Flex, Love Bug, Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know. And personal with Robin Leach. And I'm far from cheap. I smoke soap with my peeps all day. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. The Moet and Alizé keep me pissy. Girls used to diss me, now they write letters cause they miss me. I never thought it could happen, this rapping stuff. I was too used to packing gats and stuff. Now honeys play me close like butter play toast. From the Mississippi down to the East Coast. Condos in Queens, in dough for weeks. Sold out seats to hear Biggie Small speak. Living life without fear, putting 5 carrots in my baby girl ear. Lunches, brunches, interviews by the pool. Considered a fool cause I dropped out of high school. Stereotypes of a black male misunderstood. And it's still all good, And if you don't know, now you know. Genesis. When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this. 50-inch screen, money green, leather sofa. Got 2 rides, a limousine with the chauffeur. Phone bill about 2 G's flat. No need to worry, my accountant handles that. And my whole crew's lounging. Celebrating every day, no more public housing. Thinking back on my one-room shack. Now my mom pimps a act with minks on her back. And she loves to show me off, of course. Smiles every time my face is up in the sauce. We used to fuss when the landlord dissed us. No heat, wonder why Christmas missed us. Birthdays was the worst days. Now we sip champagne when we thirsty. Damn right I like the life I live. Cause I went from negative to positive. And it's all. And if you don't know, now you know. And if you don't know...